I'm Cara Lawrence.
Well, after performing the final three sonatas of Ludwig van Beethoven yesterday afternoon and anticipating a Beethoven concerto performance this Saturday, Igor Levit, the 2018 Gilmore artist, is here at WMUK to take a little bit of his morning to say hello and perhaps give us an overview of some of your experiences at the festival so far. Very nice to have you here, Igor.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very, really pleased. This is very exciting. I was there at the recital yesterday. And maybe we could just plunge right into that. I just want to give you my reaction to having heard the final three, Beethoven sonatas. It was very satisfying, like as if I had spent the time reading a great novel, or I just got so much literature from this great mind, and unsatisfying because I'm left needing to know so much more. There's so much more to learn about who he was and why, and why you made the choices you did. It's not just cut and dried. You have to keep reorienting back to it. It was extraordinary.
Thank you.
Another image that came to mind was this idea of Beethoven walking up to an abyss of some kind and casting a line out into it and drawing it back in. We'd hear things come back again, and then he'd throw it back out again. And at times you feel so just suspended from reality. You're gone. Really gone.
Yeah, that does happen sometimes, although I do not think that we can certainly speak about it. At the same time, I couldn't agree more with you that after each time you make this experience, you hear these pieces, or you listen to them, or you play them, you work on them, it doesn't really matter. It leaves you sort of satisfied and not satisfied. That is, that's just reality. It's not very much different to anything else what is important in life, right? So that's, people were writing books about that. And gazillions of pages of books were written exactly on that topic, and there's no answer whatsoever. but I must say that my questions, which occur all the time, are not specifically about, okay, who was Beethoven, right? This is one part of it. But the same part is, and then of the same importance is, who am I? So then, that's why I profoundly dislike and always disliked any conversation on the term interpretation, because first of all, I don't know what this is supposed to be. Number two, it sounds like a result. For me, a concert is not about that. It's just one step up after the other. I'm sitting at home, I'm working on these pieces, I step on stage, I play them, I walk back home, I work on them. It's some kind of reality variation, right? But it was a very special and very intense concert yesterday.
Yes, it was. So it's a
bit... I got the piano out of tune.
Congratulations. So it's a bit of a fool's errand to go finding this ultimate interpretation or the final thought on a piece of music or...
Yeah, it's sort of it goes against whatever art is supposed to be, I think. The idea of a final result is the single most unmusical and sort of non-art related idea I can think of.
Does that mean all of your performances, if we played this recital again today, it would take you in a completely different direction?
I don't really care about the performance of yesterday.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's gone. I don't think about that. Uh-huh. It's yesterday.
Well, maybe you could talk a little about, tell our audiences here in Kalamazoo, I've heard the story, but about being lured out of your hotel room after another performance and learning that this award was yours at some midnight or something.
Oh, yes. That was fun. I mean, it happened in London, in the UK. I performed there at the Wigmore Hall. And it was pretty late. It was a very long, long recital. And I went out for dinner. I had a couple of drinks. And then at about 11:15 p.m., I get this message from a man I knew who is based in Lucerne in Switzerland. So my first thought was, what on earth are you doing in London? Well, in fact, my first thought was slightly different, but I will not use curse words here. And that's actually what I asked him. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, that doesn't really matter. All I want you to do is to get in a cab and get to Hotel XYZ. And I said, I won't. It's too late. I'm here with friends. Forget it. It's just too late. Let's meet tomorrow. I'm tired. And then he sends me another message and says, no, you have to come. And I still had no idea what he wants. So I said, no, I won't come. It's late. And then he wrote me another time and he said, no, but you have to. And then I got pretty annoyed. And so I took a cab and I went to this hotel. I walk in, very nice place. I walk into the lobby and there I see my friend, or this gentleman, and I asked again, what are you doing here? And then he said, well, that doesn't really matter, but just go to the bar and you'll find out. So I walk into the bar and there I meet Dan Gustin, and I'm like, what are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be 350,000 kilometers away in Michigan, in Kalamazoo, Michigan? And she said, well, yeah, I am, but here I am. I said, what do you want? What brings you here? And he said, well, first let's sit down. So we took a seat and he asked me if I want a drink. I said, no. Well, and then he basically said, well, you are the Gilmore Award, the Gilmore artist, and the recipient of the award 2018. And my first reaction was, well, now I do want a drink. And we had a couple of scotch, I think two or three drinks. But that was the story. And it was really touching and very, very special, you know, because of many, many reasons. I really like Dan and it means a lot. So that's like the short story. I left out all funny details.
You'd heard of the award probably by then. Had you ever come across the paths of Kirill Gerstein or Ingrid Fleeter or Leif Ove Andsnes?
Leif Ove, yes.
Yeah.
And I admire him and I like him so, so much. He's one of the most wonderful musicians, a wonderful human being, a great, great colleague, and just a wonderful person. So I did meet him. In fact, we played once together.
Really?
Yeah.
A two piano?
Yeah. It was quite a while ago. And so I did come across, you know, but the others, I met Kirill Gerstein once. That's ages ago. And that's it so far.
Okay. You've been here in Kalamazoo for a few days, since Monday, I think. Are you getting a sense of the festival, the people, the town at all?
Well, slowly, step by step, but I get a sense of an incredible kind of dedication by everyone. Everyone really is with the festival and identifies, you know, with the festival. Nothing comes out of nowhere, and you can almost smell the amount of work and energy and dedication which stands behind everything what's happening here. It's quite special.
It is what Kalamazoo is known for. It's the music is sort of part of the identity of this town. And sometimes it occurs to me that had the industry barons of a century ago been interested in woodworking, we would have been the woodworking capital, you know. But we're lucky for us. It's music.
The woodworking capital sounds like a good idea.
Well, I'd go to that festival too.
Yeah, probably. Woodworking festival sounds like a very good idea.
The smell of sawdust everywhere.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'll think about that in my next life.
Your current life has you playing another work on Saturday with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. Our music director emeritus is returning to conduct, Raymond Harvey. The program begins at 8 p.m. on Saturday in Chenery Auditorium. There are tickets still available, and the website is thegilmore.org. So, Beethoven Fourth. I looked at the history of the piece a little bit. He sort of previewed it privately first in, I think, March of some year. And then in December, he had a public performance of it. It was the last time he was seen as a soloist in public. The Fourth Concerto has some really great unusual features. I would ask you to maybe introduce it to people who would be hearing it for maybe the first time or just...
Well, that's a hard task.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go into super
sure,
detail.
Sure. But of all the concerti he wrote, this is by far the most... the kind of freedom which exists in this piece is quite astonishing. I mean, it's all about improvisation. It's all about being... It's an incredibly gentle piece. It's very warm, very humane. Very often the piano simply disappears. It's not of a great importance what the piano is playing. It's more important what the orchestra does. It's a very it's a piece about, you know, being colleagues with the musicians. It's very difficult to achieve that kind of trust. You can't go on stage and be like, you know, here I am and I know the best words and just stand behind me. You can't do that. You have to, you know, you have to respect and really live with your colleagues on stage in that very moment. It is a very joyful piece. It is a very warm piece. Mm-hmm. And yet, the second movement is one of the darkest pieces of music I think Beethoven wrote. And it is absolutely magnificent to experience and to listen to it, because you understand right from the beginning that the orchestra and the piano are basically playing two totally different pieces in terms of dynamics and mood and character and tempo and whatsoever. They have nothing to do with each other. And in the end, the pianist forces the orchestra to come closer to him, not the other way around. And then the third movement begins, and it's just 10 to 11 minutes of outbursting joy. And just the sun shines, and it's just phenomenal. It's a phenomenal experience and a very hard piece.
Why don't we listen to what I would call a vintage recording from 1942 that you expressed some positive feelings toward, the Arthur Schnabel recording with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Frederick Stock conducting. And so, listeners, this will sound a little lo-fi, but listen for beautiful piano playing and orchestral playing. In Beethoven's Concerto No. 4, my guest is Igor Levit, the 2018 Gilmore artist who appears with the Kalamazoo Symphony on Saturday at 8 p.m. in Chenery Auditorium. Details online at thegilmore.org. It is so hard to turn the volume down on a great recording. Arthur Schnabel heard there with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And we're visiting with the 2018 Gilmore artist, Igor Levit, who performs this work on Saturday with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, Raymond Harvey, conducting. Have you performed this concerto frequently with orchestras?
Oh, yes, a couple times. Not as much as the other concert, not as much as the others, but yeah, pretty frequently.
Do you go back and listen to some of the past recordings out there of, I don't know, they go back to Cylinder?
Well, I do, but Arthur Schnabel in particular is one of my great heroes, so I do know many, many, many of these recordings pretty well. But I do listen to lots of music, no matter of of genre or date of recording. I just listen to lots of music.
Me too. Who are some of, he's a hero. Could you tell us about one or two other heroes of yours? Not necessarily dead recording artists, but...
Well, there are a couple. I mean, there are, speaking just of pianists or musicians or generally?
The people that pop into your head right now.
Well, there are many. I mean, there are certain musicians, also among them pianists, who I would consider being really highly, highly influential to me, non-regarding of how long I've known them so far. I would name someone like, a man like Fred Hirsch certainly is a great influence and someone I admire highly and who became a very dear, over the short period of time we've known each other, a very dear and man and friend to me.
I want to quickly tell listeners, Fred Hirsch is a jazz pianist based in New York whose life story is kind of improbable. He's gone through some incredible ups and downs. And
his autobiography, which he wrote, Good Things Happen Slowly, I think that's the title, is a book I would recommend every single listener to read. You read it through in a couple of days. And it's one of the most touching experiences you'll ever have.
Have you spent time with him?
I do. And I heard him play last year for the first time. And I must admit, I did not know who he was. So a friend of another jazz musician I know called me and said, oh, Fred Hirsch playing tonight at the Village Vanguard. You want to come? And I said, well, I would love to. And I was in New York at that time. But I felt a little embarrassed, so I wouldn't admit that I didn't know who Fred Hirsch actually was. Mm-hmm. And so I walked into this club, where I've never been before. So it was like a night of first incredible experiences. And Fred played a gig with his trio, which was absolutely magnificent on so, so, so many levels. Like I couldn't name just two, three, four reasons. Like it was just magnificent. But then he remained on stage and then he walked back on stage and then he played an encore. And the encore was piano solo. And he improvised on Billy Joel's And So It Goes. And this was music making of a kind I have never heard in my entire life in a performance before, period. When whatever he did, whatever phrase he played, whatever, note he played, whatever tune, how he worked with his tune, it never felt like he does something or he puts the phrase in this on or that direction. It just happened. It just happened. And of course, this is the highest and sort of greatest possible aim you can have as a musician, where you don't do stuff anymore. It just happens. And in order to achieve that, of course, you have to be not just a master of your instrument, but just so much has to come.
We started off saying, you have to know yourself.
And I was crying and smiling and laughing and whatsoever. And then I approached him and that's how we met. And ever since, I've been pretty often in New York, and we write each other. And he's the greatest gift to all of us, not just the ones who make music and who love music, but I think to all of us who have the chance to experience such a guy. I mean, he's an incredible man.
Well, listeners,
so he's a hero. He's some kind of hero for me. Yeah, absolutely.
Listeners, put Fred Hirsch on your list.
He's made many
recordings, and some of them are purely solo. Some of them are with his trio. To be at the Vanguard, though, and hear
it
happen.
Quite great.
Yeah. Something else.
But then, you know, I have all kinds of heroes in my life who don't necessarily are musicians. I mean, so I'm not a horse with blinders. So, you know, it would be difficult to name all of them.
I mentioned Lefova Ansnes, and you mentioned knowing him a bit. I did speak to him before his performance at the festival. And we talked a bit about Beethoven. He's had a long series of recordings come out and projects to do with Beethoven's music. One of the things he said was when he was young, Beethoven was intimidating. It kept him a little at a distance. Today, Beethoven is freedom. It is about freedom, striving for freedom, he said. And I think you used the word freedom when you described Beethoven a bit earlier in this hour. That rings with me too. I feel the man was in some ways trapped, and with his own deafness, you know, and his music is far reaching. He's striving for that. What is he striving for, do you think?
Well, it's hard to answer and to agree on some kind of common ground here, but I agree with Lefova that although I never felt intimidated by Beethoven, I feel more intimidated in my age by, let's say, Chopin. That's why I don't play him on stage. I wouldn't, you know, it's a composer I love, and I really, I could listen to his music all day long, but I wouldn't necessarily walk on stage and play it. But Beethoven, look, it's a permanent conflict. I mean, again, I did not know him. So it's always difficult to sort of to speak about someone you know quite a lot, but frankly, not so much. I mean, you know, you can write about a human being, about a man, as much as you want. You know him only by seeing him, by speaking to this person, by. And we all don't have the chance to do that, obviously. So we are always very limited. But if we think about ourselves, then it is this permanent struggle of, you know, I do want to be free, and I strive for this freedom, and I fight for this freedom, and I struggle with this freedom. But and yet, you know, I have all kinds of doubts about it, because to be free brings an enormous amount of responsibility. And what does it actually mean? And what does it mean to other people around you? So there is this permanent sort of conflict in our lives, which I think is evident in Beethoven's music. That's why, for me, he was always the composer who sort of spoke to me in a way that I thought, well, it's music about us. I never liked the idea of artists who would say, well, I'm the only the servant of the composer.
I've heard that so many times.
I don't think that's. I think it sounds good. It's like a very. On the surface, it's a smart thing to say, but intellectually and artistically, it doesn't make any sense.
You're drawing this line so It just so hard.
Absolutely doesn't. Well, it doesn't make any sense. And just by showing you why, I can ask a very simple question. Well, it's who is on stage and playing? It's me. So, you know, it's once I spoke to a journalist and he said then, well, the greatest artists are the ones who sort of step back behind the music. And then I asked, so, well, you don't know me whatsoever. How do you know that I stepped back behind the music? How do you know? So then on the other side, there was silence. I said, how do you know that I actually took a step back? You have no idea whatsoever. I am the one who tries to understand this text and I share music with you, but I am the one on stage. I do not hide. I don't sort of jump on Beethoven and say, I'm the boss and you're who are you, but I am not hiding. And I think this music would completely like we would ruin it if we as human beings with all our struggles would hide behind it. And so I don't know another composer who is as humane, as human, as difficult and complicated and joyful and aggressive and violent and full of love and whatever you want like him.
My guest is 2018 Gilmour artist Igor Levit, who will perform Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 4 on Saturday at 8 p.m. with the Kalamazoo Symphony. The program begins with Mendelssohn's Calm Sea and Prosperous Voyage and continues with William Bolcom's Symphony No. 1. It's a celebration of, I believe, his 80th birthday. William Bolcom will be in attendance to hear his first symphony, and the program will close with the Beethoven Concerto No. 4. Igor, you received notice just yesterday that another award has been given to you. What would you tell us what that is?
Yes, I just got the notice that the Royal Philharmonic Society of London awarded me with the Instrumentalist of the Year award, which for I don't know what for. You have to ask them. But it's a greatest honor and joy for me. And for the listeners who don't know what the Royal Philharmonic Society is, I don't blame you. But just one information which will give you an idea of what importance these people are. This society is so old and so important and so sort of influential in London. They were the guys who commissioned the Ninth Symphony by Beethoven. They were the ones he wrote this piece for. And so they are, they have a great deal of history
they
behind
have
them.
A couple hundred years at least.
At least, yeah.
Of being interested
so
in
it's a great honor
music.
For me to be, you know, to be awarded with this prize.
How many concerts would you say you've done this last season?
About 80.
Do you travel, of course, a lot? Mostly the music centers of Europe? Or
no, I do travel a lot when I perform. And whenever I do not perform, I travel a lot. And then I travel to any place I feel sort of an urgency and an importance to go. And it's not necessarily European capitals or the, you know, I go very often to the United States. I've been to several African countries. I would see it always depends on what I think is important for me in that very moment. So I'm traveling basically all the time.
Do you have a person or a manager that helps set the schedule and things like that?
And I have the single greatest manager imaginable.
Really?
Yeah. And we are very close. And Christine is, we've been working together for 4 years now. And she has been a real, real, one of the greatest gifts I so far received in my life. Absolutely. I mean, we have, and she's a, we're very, very close. We're very, we do everything together. By saying that, I mean I do my programs. That's clear, and I make them and I think about them. But I share everything with her, and so we do things together. And whenever something beautiful happens, like what happened yesterday with the Royal Philharmonic Award or the Gilmour Award or any concert or whatsoever. I never sort of feel, well, I'm the one who got that, thank you. But she has a great deal of responsibility for that. And I acknowledge that as often as I only can. And so, she's quite phenomenal.
That's a nice tribute to Christine.
Absolutely.
I watched a streaming feed when you appeared in New York in January when the Gilmour Award was announced. You talked to Fred Child from Performance Today. And one of the most unusual things I think you said was, I think he asked about what you thought about when you played music. And I don't think I'd ever heard anyone say it before, but you said that it's often memories of people or, you know, people themselves come to mind as you play. And I wanted to follow up on that.
Oh, it's not often. It's always.
It's always.
It's always. I've never seen anything else while making music than people. And it's just a fact. And the explanation is pretty simple. The explanation is that as long as I can think, as far as I can think back and since the very childhood, nothing has inspired me more in my life, nothing, than people. So the reason for traveling was to meet people. The reason to make music were the people. This is what inspires me most. I love nature and art and literature, and I read a lot, and it's all great. But it is the people who inspire me most. And so whenever I make music, which happens to be quite often, I see people. But that changes day by day. Like I would play, and again, I would play a certain piece, and then next day I play the same piece, and it's different people. And I told you before, I don't care about the yesterday's performance. It's gone. It's over. So I can never tell who I will see, but I see people. Yeah.
Igor Levit.
No, I'm not a crazy person.
Igor Levit appears on Saturday with his final performance of this festival, the Piano Concerto No. 4 of Beethoven, on the program. It will be a singular performance, as I think you've established. Why don't we close here with a little of the second movement of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 4, which you referred to as devastating or dark.
Yeah.
I know the opening, the concerto itself is in G major. What key does he use for
E minor.
It? E minor.
It's an E minor piece, and quite unique and really, really, really dark.
Well, there will
nice
be
nice way to end.
Oh, classic. Okay, well, that's what we're going to do anyway, because the folks will just have to be in their seats on Saturday for the finale. Igor, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.